For the gardening conversation for this part of the show, let's talk about what I usually do every year. Matter of fact, one of the most fun times I ever had is every year my friend and I, Bob Webster, would say, how many times are you going to tell everybody how to plant a tomato? But believe it or not, successful planting of tomatoes is not quite as simple as it is. It's not a real complicated situation, but you want to get the right tomatoes. I happen to like heirlooms. You want to decide if you're going to have a determinate or indeterminate tomato. The difference with that is the determinates were actually bred, hybridized, to all come due at one time. It's more like a commercial grower. You want to get all your tomatoes in, get them all out at the same time, then that plant is really spent. It's kind of gone, and you replant. Whereas if you get indeterminates and you take care of them, they can go through several seasons. You'll get tomatoes kind of staggered along as you go. There's some people that think the determinates are better. Some think indeterminates. I like the indeterminates myself. They're a more normal tomato for me, and I don't need bunches. I'm not trying to be in the tomato business. One fact you should be aware of with your tomatoes is, unlike a lot of other plants, you can actually plant the tomato deeper than you've got it, especially if you either grew your own seed or you bought them already in those little pre-pots. I always go to the top of the first two leaves, the monocots, the leaves that first come on when it's growing, and I get those underground. I actually even kind of take them off, and I'll go that deep, even if it matters laying the tomato on the side a little bit, because, again, the tomato is one of these plants. It'll just improve its roots. It'll just become part of the plant. Some things, if you plant them too deep, it's actually not healthy for the plant. That tomato is not that way. Number two things you should do that are not often told about in this part of the country, where you're hearing me right now, you probably ought to find something called soft rock phosphate. Now, you don't want the real chemical phosphates. They're too hot. They'll burn. But you can buy soft rock phosphate in most any decent commercial outlet that carries natural and organic products. And you want to literally take a little tablespoon, a handful, whatever, dig your hole and put that little bit of soft rock right in the hole. Don't mix it in the soil. This sounds counterintuitive. You want it right there where those roots go, right on that phosphate when you put it in the ground. I usually don't put fertilizer right in the hole. You'll understand that in a little bit. I go ahead and cover that now with that rock phosphate right there with the roots of the plant that's been soaked, incidentally. I always soak my tomatoes to get them out of those little containers. I don't like the instant containers that are supposedly fall apart, because they don't fall apart very well. And they cause your roots to either circle or get too concentrated before that peat pot goes away. So get your plant out of the pot, get it in the ground, pack it around it pretty good. Again, deeper is just fine. Go ahead up to at least to those first beginning leaves is the easiest way to say it. Pack it. The only other thing I do at first, sounds a little interesting, but it works. And then again, this part of the country, and I'll explain that in a minute why. Go buy some Epsom salts. Yes, folks, like you soak your feet in, like you may take a bath in, like they are magnesium sulfate. Because of the alkalinity of our soils, and almost everywhere you hear this show, we need that magnesium, and that sulfur helps it break. It makes it more available to the plant. And I just put it right on top of the ground as a granule, and I water it in as I'm watering those plants in thoroughly, and they will get to the roots. It's amazing how much they give that plant a boost. So after you've spread your Epsom salts around, okay, then water that whole system, even though you've already soaked the roots to get them in the ground. Water everything one more time really good. Now, my method for watering might be a little different than you've been told. When I water tomatoes, I water them very well, but I don't water them really often. I think the right sentence is you can't water them too much. At the time you water, hardly ever, but you can water them too often. So make yourself a schedule where you can't go by, well, every third day or every, because what happens if humidity doubles for 3 days? What happens if the sun doesn't shine, or the sun shines constantly? All makes a difference. You need to do the, I call it the dirty finger method. Get your finger, go into the ground. I go to about the first joint of my finger. And if it's dry down that far, then I water thoroughly. But if it's damp, especially if you got soil sticking to the bottom of that first joint of your finger, you might want to wait a few days. Tomatoes actually come from an arid part of the world, the original ones. Most of the ones that have successfully been grown by us. The original ones were out of Peru. Now there's even wild tomatoes. I'll tell this story next. I lived in a place called Galapagos, Ecuador, and one of the scientists came out there. His search was literally in search of the wild tomato of Galapagos. So tomatoes they're a nightshade. They grow a lot of places. But anyway, the ones that we grow are kind of on the dry side. They're not really a swamp tomato, although some of the newer varieties of the little cherries and things will grow almost anywhere. One of the best plants I ever went to crop from was I owned a store in San Antonio called Roadrunner Photo, and the next door was a pizza place. And in their pavement, the actual pavement in the back, I guess the seeds had dropped from them taking out pizzas and all that. Some of the best cherry tomatoes I ever saw were growing through the pavement in the back of that store. So anyway, that might be more than you want to know about tomatoes, but remember, get your soft rock phosphate. There's still people that you can get it from, any good organic outlet. Get yourself some Epsom salts. Yes, you can use an organic fertilizer at some point. I like Medina's products, but there's a bunch of them. Or you can make your own. But anyway, that's sort of it. All you need to know to grow a successful tomato.
Bird of the week this week is a starling. Starlings are relatives of the minor birds. Like them, they have impressive vocal abilities and a gift for mimicry. They can warble, whistle, chatter, make smooth liquid sounds, harsh trills and rattles, and imitate meadowlarks, blue jays, and other birds. The songs tend to consist of either loud whistles or softer jumbling warbling. Whistled songs are a few seconds long, often used between two males. Warbled songs can go on for more than a minute and seem mainly directed at females. Males sing several varieties of each of these two classes of songs. Females also sing, particularly in the fall. Songs often include imitations of other birds, the eastern wood towhee, killdeer, meadowlarks, northern bobwhite, brown-headed cowbirds. The list goes on and on. Male and female starlings use about 10 kinds of calls to communicate about where they are, whether there's a danger around, and how aggressive or agitated they feel. Among these are a purr-like call given as the bird takes flight, and a rattle that starlings make as they join a flock on the ground. Two types of screaming-like calls indicate aggression and are often accompanied by flapping wings. One is a chattering call, the other is a high-pitched trill. Starlings also make a metallic chip note to other flock members and when harassing or mobbing predators. It might be added here, folks, that they also talk very well. If you happen to get a young one hand-tamed, they talk as good as and better than some parrots and as good as old cockatiels and a number of birds. And they're quite plain when they talk. It's better talk, really, than even birds like parakeet. Starlings were introduced here in America about 100 years ago. They're not a native, therefore they're not protected. Unlike our native songbirds, people kill them by the tens of thousands. They're a real pest to some people. But because they are not protected, it is one of the birds, if you want a bird that's very interesting, very intelligent, that'll hang around the house, will talk for you, will interact with you. Then if you happen to come across a young starling and raise it, it fits the bill and it's totally legal.
I do want to mention here, even though we're talking about starlings, which are introduced birds, folks, I want to make sure you understand why that's legal. They are not protected in any manner. But almost every bird here in the United States is protected as a songbird. You can't just go get birds, okay, without proper permits or if somebody's you're helping to save them. And that includes even animals that you'd think wouldn't be protected at all, such as ravens and crows. Now, other birds that are not protected, if you just happen to be a bird nerd or you find one and just want to save it or protect it, would certainly be pigeons because they're actually an introduced bird. People don't realize that. They came from Europe with the settlers. Yes, you can have pigeons. Of all things, don't know why you'd want one, although I've raised several. English sparrows. Now, I got to know what an English sparrow is because we have about 20, 25 sparrows of our own that are totally protected. And in general, they're protected under a thing called the songbird protection. And yes, even though you think of a crow as the last thing in the world that might be considered as a songbird, it is actually covered under that particular law. So just be a little careful. I have saved a bunch. I happen to have been for years, haven't even kept it up now because I have not done it as much, to be what's called a 501c3. You can look it up. I was a nonprofit to save birds that fell out of trees, and I was a teacher. And every spring, the kids at school knew that I was doing that. I did them different, though. I didn't cage them. My birds grew up to go free, and I can teach somebody how to do that if they want. Okay, I did keep them in cages at first when I was hand feeding them when they had no feathers. But from the time they were going to be out of the nest, if they were a young bird and I had my license, I would begin showing them. And at one point, they would just go off. Find mates. Some of them came back as many as 3 years in a row. One vulture I helped raise came back for 6 years, including bringing me babies. So anyway, just wanted to let you know at the end of this so you didn't go and get yourself in trouble, number one. And believe me, most of the time, the wild animals are way better off without us interfering. And just because I have a little time left, I'll tell you one more bird story that I haven't told to too many people. That was a roadrunner that I raised. Don't know what happened to the parents. Don't have a right answer for you. But this scraggly looking skinny thing, I lived in the country in central Texas, well, south Texas, was just outside my door one day. He was really not near ready to fly. He had some feather on him. He wasn't naked completely. But he was too young to do. How he got to where he was, I have no idea. Had no way to, so I decided to kind of take care of him and give it a shot. You wouldn't believe what an exciting, I never did cage him. He lived, grew up, I'd feed him. I did put him in my porch at night, screened in porch so something wouldn't eat him. He grew very rapidly, but the intelligent thing about it was he also hung around for the first whole year and came and went and ate with the cat. They learned to like each other. And the most exciting thing was I had a pond, and he learned to fish like an egret. And he lived on my goldfish for about the first 6 months of his life. So if you want another interesting bird, don't go get one. But if you ever want to watch one, sometimes they just come up and hang around your house. Consider making friends with a roadrunner. They're very interesting animals. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matter.